Here's your host, Spencer Wilson.
Yeah. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside the studio. This is the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson, joined by, as always, by Sean Cloud.
How's everyone doing?
Yeah. It Woo! Is a beautiful August afternoon out there. Finally starting to get smoky.
Oh, yeah. Yesterday was nice.
Yeah. I was at the Aces game last night, and it's you can see mountains. It's literally like a different world out there when the smoke goes away.
Yeah. I mean, you can't see mountains today, though. No. That's for sure. You definitely can't see anything.
It's kind of come back in a little bit.
Well, we have those wind gusts. You know, we all got a warning on our phone, saying unhealthy right now.
I mean, just all these fires. It's really just astonishing, really. I mean, it's gotten to a point where it's just, I mean, I can't believe it.
When is California not on fire in the summer? That's the true question.
I'm always surprised that there's still a state left, because it always feels like there's like four or five fires. Like, how is that state just not gone every year?
It's either going to go underwater or be on fire.
My gosh.
That's all it's going to be.
But it's still one of the nicer states out there. It is a beautiful state. You can't take that away from them. A lot to get to on the broadcast today. We're going to talk, obviously, like we mentioned, it's the first Friday of August, so everyone's got football fever. Every corner of the country is freaking out about football, mostly because the Hall of Fame and the Hall of Fame game was last night, so the first kind of official kickoff game to the preseason and all of that good stuff.
Did you watch it?
I watched part of it. I don't really. We'll get into more of that later in the show. I don't really care for preseason, but we'll get into that a little more in the show. But we're going to talk some NFL, some rule changes, going to talk some overview of what we think the preseason will be like and what the regular season will be like. We'll talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame as well. We'll get into some Wolfpack football. We're going to do kind of a little bit of a series heading up to their first game here in 4 weeks.
Yeah, 4 weeks
four
away.
4 weeks. And I think they host Portland. They host Portland State.
Yeah.
I believe here in Reno to start off their season. So we'll count down a little bit to that. We'll preview their schedule for the season today. And but like always, we always got to start right here in the biggest little city with what is going on right now, and that is Aces and 1868 FC. And the Aces are playing pretty good baseball right now. If you don't know, they've won 7 games in a row, and I believe they are now 4 games over 500. 3 games, 4 games over 500?
One of the two.
Right in that area. The most they've been over 500 the whole season.
Yeah, the best they've done the entire
season.
Yeah,
the last time they were over 500 before they got to that point now was literally the first 2 games of the year back in April when they were 2-0. Then they went to 2-3, and they've been fighting back ever since. But let's start with, let's go back to last week real quick, because we ended the show talking about them winning the last game in New Orleans, 11-7, and we had stated that there were 2 teams left in the PCL that had not thrown a shutout, and that was Reno and the team they're going to play in Round Rock.
Right.
Well, as fate would have it, that very night, what do the Aces do? They shut out Round Rock.
3-0.
So now, I mean, that's pretty...
That was a great game.
That was a great
game. I really
game.
Enjoyed that game.
It was a great game, and it's a little eerie that literally the day that we make a big deal about them not shutting a team out, they go and shut out Round Rock 3-0.
You know, I'm pretty superstitious. I think we gave them that look. I'm gonna take that.
I would agree with that. They heard the challenge come from the booth, and they answered it.
Oh, yeah.
But they did. They beat them 3-0 in their first game thanks to a combined pitching effort from Taylor Clark, Silvino Bracho, and Jimmy Sherfy. And the highlight of those three had to be when Silvino Bracho came in, bottom of the seventh inning, they're in Round Rock, bottom of the seventh inning, bases were loaded and nobody was out.
I remember
Silvino Bracho comes in and he strikes out 3 straight batters to give up 0 runs in a bases loaded, no out situation. That's pretty amazing pitching for that. And not only did he get them out, it wasn't like pop fly.
He struck them all out.
All 3 of them. Boom, boom, boom. Gone. And that's pretty incredible. Then he comes back in the 8th inning and goes 1-2-3 again.
Right.
I mean, a little less pressure this time. No one on base. But that's incredible. 6 up, 6 down like that.
That's what we've been talking about the whole season is our relief pitching needed to kick it into gear. We needed to hold those early inning runs and scores and make it through. And that's what we've shown these past 7 wins that we've got, especially after the next game, we go 8-0, another shutout, which I'm sure you were about to get to.
I was about to get to that. That's correct. Yeah, well, the second game, you mentioned it, we had another three-man pitching effort that held them to just one hit in the 3-1 win. That was Koch, Vasquez, and Barrett all got that effort. Vasquez got the win. And then Crone in that game just continues to bat out of his mind. He went 5-for-5 in that game with two home runs. It ties his career best in the 5-for-5 performance. And this year, he's batting .331 with 18 home runs, 77 RBIs, and 41 runs scored in just 72 games.
Wow.
That's pretty productive. And then, like you mentioned it, Reno closed out the series on Monday with a 3-0 sweep of Round Rock.
8-0.
Well, yeah, 3-0 in the series.
Oh,
8-0 was the score. I should have phrased that better. But yes, 8-0 was the score. They won all three games. 36 innings of work with that pitching staff and just gave up 3 runs. Tip of the cap, because that's about as good as you can get it.
Right.
Starters, Taylor Clark, Matt Koch, Jake Buchanan, Neftali Feliz, 23 innings between them, 12 hits and 13 strikeouts. There you go. We have mentioned it. That pitching has been an issue, and this series, it just flipped it all on its head. And offense, too.
Yeah,
because their offense has been a little shaky, but they've shown up pretty much all 7 games in a row here.
Crone, Walker, Vargas, they're all swinging and actually hitting and making contact. And they're actually bringing runners in, too. That was the big thing.
Yeah.
We were always making contact, but we weren't bringing runners in. So when we were on second or third in scoring distance, 0 outs, we couldn't score. Now we're doing it. We look like our old selves again. That's how.
The Aces now in the midst of a 7-game homestand where they are currently in a series with Colorado Springs. They'll play their third and final game of that series tonight, and they'll play 4 games against Oklahoma City before a day off and going on a short road trip to where, Sean? So you got the schedule
there. Las Vegas.
To Las Vegas to take on the 51s. Hated rivals, the 51s. Who, did you tell me? Is there a rumor that they're changing?
No, I think Haley said that.
Haley said that last week?
Yeah, apparently there's a rumor out there that the 51s won't be the 51s anymore.
They're going to change
Vegas
it to something.
Vegas is taking in names from their city to figure out what the new name is going to be.
It's always interesting when teams do that,
yeah.
When they give the fans the power to choose their name. That's like whenever I see a parent or somebody like, ooh, go online and vote for our baby's new name. Like, why would you give the internet that power?
Right?
I'd be like,
I'm just waiting for the day that Beers becomes the name, you know,
yeah,
an official name.
Oh, my
name.
Gosh. You know, there's no law against what you can name your kids.
No.
You can name your kid anything.
You really can.
You can name him Fart if you want. There's no law against that.
I'm going to do that now.
Yeah, there you go. Sorry to Sean's kid that's going to be born in the future and have that name. That's going to be tough.
That's going to be
first two out of those 3 games against Colorado Springs in the book. The first game was it was literally an essence of what the Aces' first half of the season has been, with just a different ending, because they had a 10-4 lead going into the 8th inning. It was 10-4. Top of the 8th inning comes, 5 runs are on the board. A grand slam is hit in the inning by Colorado Springs. I told the voice of the Aces, Ryan Radke, told him after the game, because, you know, as Sean knows, you have a little conversation with him after the game before you say good night.
Always.
And I told him that when that grand slam was hit, my head went to my hands. I was like, you've got to be kidding me right now. 10-4 with 6 outs left, and you're going to give up a grand slam right now? So 10-9 was the score after the top of the 8th. Luckily, though, that pitching staff again showed up, did their job, got out of the inning, and then shut the door in the 9th, and they took that 10-9 victory. This was the 16th game that the Aces scored 10 or more runs this season. They've only lost one of them. They're 15-1 in those games. The only loss came, I believe, on June 23rd at Vegas. They lost 11-14.
I always feel like it's a nail-biter, too. Whenever they get more than 10 runs, you're like, yeah. Oh, get ready for another 9
like,
runs to
oh,
be
no.
scored soon.
How is this going to go down? I had that feeling last night, too. They were up 6-2 and going again to the 8th inning. And I was like, oh, no, man, come on. Come on. And then in the 9th inning, they get 2 guys on base, I think with 1 or 2 outs. I'm just going, you just please, please finish this. Please finish this. But Reno ranking 3rd in the PCL right now in runs scored, just behind Albuquerque and Salt Lake. Again, and you look at how the season started, you didn't really know how they were going to do. But that, again, just very telling of what this Aces team can do when they decide to turn it on. They just become a scoring team. Last night, again, the Aces put on another great performance. They won 6-2, but again, Yadimaro Vargas is standing out. He continues that hit streak, got it up to 28 games now Longest hitting streak this season in the PCL, but Vargas is second only to Jake Elmore.
Wow.
Who hit 31 games straight in 2012. So he's closing in. He's
closing in.
Four more games and he'll have the record all to himself. But during this streak, Vargas has hit 382, had 21 home runs, and I'm sorry, 21 runs scored, and had 10 doubles, 11 RBIs, and an on-base percentage of .437. Just outstanding from that young man during this season. I'm surprised that he hasn't gotten a nod to Arizona this season.
You know,
at least one time.
I'm surprised a few. Like, Crone's been doing good. Vargas has been doing good. Walker, who's gone up and down constantly, maybe he's just, you know, finally just, all right, I'm just going to stay at the Aces, I guess. And it might make sense at this point.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of, and that's a lot to say about the Arizona team. That just means that whoever they have up right now is doing good work, and they are.
Yeah,
know?
They are. So, they're hanging a very, what's become a rather competitive division between Arizona, Colorado, and Los Angeles.
Right.
With San Francisco and kind of falling out and San Diego never being involved. but yeah, they have done a very, have had a very good team this year, and especially when you look at Reno, I feel like whenever some of these guys maybe want to go find a different home or a different opportunity, there's so much talent here that if the Diamondbacks can keep that talent here, they can just pluck all future all-stars up to their roster whenever they want to. But let's talk about another team that was doing very, very well and still is doing very, very well, but suffered a rather tough loss a week ago. The 1868 FC, after 3 months of not losing a game, finally tasted defeat to the St. Louis FC squad, falling 2-1. 16 matches, 105 days, and it's over. But what a run.
It was not a pleasant game either, to be honest. Like,
yeah,
we did good. We came up 1-0 in the beginning, and then they came back with a run.
A goal.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. We're in a baseball mindset.
We're all wearing baseball caps. You know, it's going. And then I can't remember completely, but I think there was like a 4 minutes or like 7 minutes left, and then they scored a second point. They gave us an extra 4 minutes, and we just couldn't come back. It was like playing monkey in the middle is what it looked like.
Yeah, Chris Wien is the one who got the goal for Reno there in the 32nd minute. And then, again, we've seen this a couple times in the 1868. They've played really well a man down. They don't let that really get to them. But in this case, in a four-minute span, Eric Calvillo picked up 2 yellow cards, so he's gone. So that's 32 minutes in. The 32nd minute is when he gets sent off. So you think they got to finish the, what is that, 13 or so minutes of the first half that's left and the entire 45 plus of the second half down a man.
Right.
Now, we've seen these guys do it before, and it felt like maybe they were going to do it again. But St. Louis, I mean, you can only do that so many times before
right.
a team sees how you play with 10 men and go, okay, well, this is how we're going to attack them. They did. They really went after the back three or the back four.
Right.
They really attacked those defenders. And they got a goal in the 73rd minute. That tied it up. And then you're right. It was about 7 minutes. Or no, I'm sorry. In the 3rd minute of stoppage time. So I don't know how much stoppage time they played. They could have been. Okay. So with about a minute left then, they got one more goal to get you a 2-1 lead. And obviously get the win there. So tough, tough loss, especially here at home in front of a rowdy, I think, what was it, 6,680 fans.
Which I give it up to those 6,000 fans because it was really smoky that day. And
yeah.
I was even surprised that I was out there and how many people were out there faithful. So props to you guys.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was not pleasant.
To have almost 6,700 people, I almost said 1,000, 6,700 people out there, that's really, really cool. So big ups to the city of Reno here for getting out there and supporting those guys. All right, we're going to head to break. When we come back, we are talking Wolfpack football schedule. And I think, what's this? Is this a giveaway?
I think we have a giveaway.
Maybe. Stick around. Let's find out what it is. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
Welcome back inside the studio.
Welcome back.
So as we mentioned, it's getting close to football season, which means, because the college football season is about a week or two ahead of the NFL schedule, so about late August is when college football gets going. So we're closer to that than we are to the NFL season. And of course, being here in Reno, we have the University of Nevada here, the Wolfpack. A lot of fun. A lot of fun to watch that team.
Yeah, so if you just moved here, Wolfpack is our
yes.
main school.
Yes.
That's what we're all known for.
The University of Nevada is the big deal here in the area. But their football schedule is out, so let's talk a little bit about it. They will start with all four of their out-of-conference games against Portland State, Vanderbilt, Oregon State, and I believe Toledo. So let's talk a little bit about Portland State, because I feel like this is a team that could be a lot like the Toledo game last year, because going into that game, you heard kind of the same talk, oh, they're a good team, they could get this win, but it should be a win for Nevada. And it wasn't. Toledo beat them last year. Portland didn't win a game last year. They went 0-11 last season. That being the first game of your season, that is so easily a sleeper loss, so you've got to be really careful, because that's a team to overlook and go, oh, they didn't win a game last year, they're an FCS team, ah, it's fine, we'll walk into our home stadium and just wipe them out and start off 1-0. No, you can't think like that. You have to go in thinking this is a team that could win a national championship, so you play at that kind of a caliber level. You have to play every game, especially when you only have 12 a season. Mm-hmm. You've got to play every game at the best level you can. So when you start off against a team like Portland State that went 0-11 last year, you got to kind of tell yourself, okay, it doesn't matter if we're up 40 points at the end of the first quarter, we got to just keep pushing. Or 4 points at the end of the first quarter. We got to push and set that tone. And no matter who we play, we're going to play well.
Right. We have to bury them.
Yes. Essentially, yes.
Don't show weakness. Show no mercy. Yeah. Just go out there as a pack and get it done.
Yes. That is the thought process. So you get past that. You hopefully get a win there. And then you get kind of the true tests of your out-of-conference play. You're going to go at Vanderbilt is their next schedule. They go on the road against a good SEC team. I'm not going to call Vanderbilt great. Me, personally, I think the entire SEC conference is overrated top to bottom. Vanderbilt's one of those higher, lower-level guys or mid-range teams in the SEC. It's still going to be a good competition, a good game for Nevada to kind of test where they are against those Power 5 conference teams. But it's not like they're going up against a Florida or a Georgia or a Bama or an Auburn. It's Vanderbilt. It's that football team in the SEC that just kind of exists in the SEC. So you hope that you can be, and this will be the first meeting between the two teams. Again, Vanderbilt struggled a little bit last year, like Portland State and kind of like Nevada. Vandy went 5-7 overall and 1-7 in their conference last year. So again, this is also a team like Nevada who's going to want to come out and prove something. And Nevada's going into Vanderbilt like Portland State's coming into Nevada. Vanderbilt might play down to you because of the name on the front of your jersey and the conference you play in. You're not a Power 5 team. You're not from some big city like Chicago or LA or San Francisco or whatever. So you going into that stadium gives you a brilliant opportunity to really cement a win early in your season, especially with this being the first meeting between the two teams, which means, yeah, you don't know quite what to expect from Vanderbilt, but they don't know what to expect from you either. So again, you come off Portland State, hopefully, as Sean said, burying them or just getting a solid win. Let's say at least 2 touchdowns. I'm going to say 17 points.
17 points.
Beat them by 2 touchdowns and a field goal at least. I think that would be a solid start to your season against Portland State, and then that would give you good momentum going to Vanderbilt.
Or you beat them by 42 and just be like, we're here.
That's good. Yeah. Again,
that's just how college games go. Again, it's either a big number or a little number. It's just, yeah. There's nothing in between.
And then they go up against Oregon State, which, again, is a home game here, which is fun. Because, again, it's another Power 5 conference team coming in. And again, another kind of lower-level Power 5 conference team. Oregon State's not doing a whole lot in the Pac-12, but it's still a good measuring stick against where you are against these kind of programs. And it could be Nevada's opportunity to get a win. Because Oregon State, this is the fourth all-time meeting between these two schools, and Oregon State's won all three of them. The last meeting was in 1999, which was here in Reno, and the Beavers won 28-13. So having this much time in between those two meetings, or between that meeting and this meeting, of course, programs have changed a whole lot, conferences have changed a whole lot, your schedule has changed. So you take that kind of with a grain of salt, but I look more at the overall series record. This is a team that, throughout history, they have struggled against. So again, you have the game against Portland State, you go on the road to Vanderbilt, and then you have this game against Oregon State, and you get that first win against this team. And again, if you're 3-0 at that point, those are three solid wins. All of a sudden, you're off to a way better start than you were last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then that welcomes that game last year, that team, Toledo. A team that everyone kind of expected Nevada to beat. They didn't. And that was here at home. And now they're going on the road to play at Toledo. And again, four previous meetings, all won by the Rockets. Three of those four have been in the regular season meetings. The only one that isn't was the 1995 Las Vegas Bowl. Toledo won that, and they won last year 37-24. Again, to lose by 13 points at home to that kind of a team, I get losing because, you know, it's sports, things like that happen. But to lose by 13 to that team here in your home field.
Well, I think we also have to look at when the game against Toledo happened. Because if it was in the beginning of the season, that's when all the rocky starts with quarterbacks and running backs and everything wasn't finalized.
Yeah, but it's not like that, you know, got overly corrected throughout the season. True. Although he did, I mean, Norvell's got his guy. He told us that a couple weeks ago. So that's good now. There's not a competition going on. He's got his guy. But again, it's not like that really corrected itself last year.
True.
To really help them. But you're right. That was before they really had the idea of where they wanted to go later in the season. That's correct. So that's the out-of-conference schedule.
Take a breath.
Excuse me while I get some water and replenish myself here. So now let's get into the conference part of their season. They play Air Force first. And they're trying to break the two years in a row win streak of Air Force, who also leads the overall series 3-1. So they won 45-38 in 2014, 45-42 last year, and Nevada won last one in 2013, 45-42. So those have been the last couple meetings between these two teams. Rather close, 45-38, 45-42, 45-42, all close contests. And now going on the road to Air Force, it's just going to be that much tougher.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to, again, bring that A game and try to get past them because – that being your first conference game, if you lose that, and again, on the road, it's tough, but if you lose that first conference game, then you got Fresno State, who's one of the projected teams to win the conference next year, and they lead that series 28-20 with a tie. And Nevada, the good news is they've won two out of the last three, 30-16 in 2015 and 27-22 in 2016. So both those relatively close games, I mean the 30-16 game isn't, but 27-22 is. But last year, Fresno had quite a big victory. 41-21 was the final of that game last year. And again, that's on the road in Fresno, so they're here again at home. But that force, if you struggle in that game and you come home kind of not beaten, but if you're kind of limping into that game home against Fresno State, I feel like the Bulldogs are just going to pounce on that. And then on top of that, you go right to Boise after. So you have Fresno State, so you have Air Force on the road, then Fresno, then Boise, and Boise's won five in a row. They didn't play in 2015 or 2016, but from 2011 to 2017, they've won every meeting. The last time Nevada won was in 2010. They won 34-31. So you look at those three games in conference, and I think it's going to tell a lot about this Wolfpack team and how they can handle adversity. Because
mm-hmm.
on the road against Air Force, then you're at home against the two teams that are projected to be kind of the leaders in this conference. Although you and I have both said it, I think Nevada, we both think Nevada is going to be, A, way better than they were last year record-wise, and B, just be able to keep up with the conference.
Well, I believe after talking with Jay that they are more of a team than they were last year. So like I said last year, you know, they didn't have that running back. They didn't have that quarterback. They didn't know where they wanted to go, what style they wanted to play in or any of that. So it was almost not necessarily a broken team, but a team on the path of rebuild. So now that team has been rebuilt, I don't really think that anyone knows what to expect from Nevada coming out of the gate in general.
It kind of is like almost a first season again.
Exactly.
Because Jay Norvell now is there. He's got his program. He's got his guy. And it's almost kind of like, okay, what you said you were going to do last year now seems reasonable for this year.
Exactly.
And that's exciting.
And he had a plan going into last year. He was going to, you know, test the field, test who was going to be the right role for each one. Going into this next year, you have Ganji, you have all your running backs into place, your wide receivers, your offensive line, your defense is looking good. I think going into this year, they're going to show, you know, they may not be a team to reckon with this year. You know, like going in, if they can go into Air Force and beat Air Force, that's going to show, yeah, hey, we can compete with Fresno. We can compete with Boise. We got this.
Absolutely.
You know, so the Toledo, Oregon, Vanderbilt, Portland, those are more or less like your preseason in a sense. You got to see it as not like a preseason, it's your real game, but you gotta, in a sense, you know, this is your time before you get into that first conference game, you know, what do we have to rebuild? What do we need to fix? Hopefully there's no injuries in the first game, because there always is.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we saw that in training camps for the NFL right now.
It seems like every time August rolls around, we have like four guys go down. That's, all right, well, this team was in it, but they lost so-and-so. So, oh, they're done now. Like, okay,
yeah, but then it's up to those other guys, the fourth string running back, be like, hey, I got this. I've been training for 4 years. I got this, you know.
So after that whole stretch, after they get through Air Force, Fresno State, Boise State, they get to go to Hawaii, which they've had nice successes against. They lead 13-9 overall in that series. They've won 6 of the last 8 games against that team. They won last year, so good momentum there. So again, you get past those three teams, you get to Hawaii, maybe that's a little more of a confidence boost. You could be looking at a 4-0 record or maybe 3-1 in conference play.
Are you ready to start saying all those Hawaiian names?
I'm not even going to try it. I tip my cap to John Ramey, who last year when we were working the Hawaii game, I listened to him pronounce those names, and I was hoarse with jealousy, because I knew that if I tried to do that, I'd mess up every name.
He spent like 2 weeks practicing the names.
Yeah, that state was made to frustrate me. But they go from Hawaii, then back home for 2 games again to play San Diego State and Colorado State. Both of those teams lead the series, but again, I feel like, as you just kind of stated, Sean, it's just a different, it's like a new year one, really. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes against San Diego State again, who's a little bit of a rival, and then Colorado State comes in. And then they play San Jose State, and Nevada's owned this matchup. They lead the series 20-9. They've won 6 of the last 7 matchups. They won last year 59-14. So those are one of those games, again, you can't overlook, but you feel confident going into that, especially when you have your last game of the season after, and that's against UNLV. And we talked about it a couple days ago. Nevada could go 0-11 going into this game, but if they win and keep the cannon blue, all right, we can deal with it.
Right.
They were able to do that last year. They've won 6 of the last 8 against UNLV. They've won 2 in a row. They were able to win the cannon in 2016 and keep it blue in 2017 with a 23-16 win here at home. And that's going to be the big question again. Regardless of how your season goes, can you regroup your team and get them in a right sense of mind to go into the rivalry game of your season and keep that cannon blue?
Yeah, if they can do that, if they went right, like you said, if they went 0-11 and won that game, you're fine.
I think they will.
Oh yeah,
I'm confident it's going to stay blue for a second year, and it's going to stay here in Nevada for the third straight year. All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk football a little more on the NFL side of things. But before we do that, Sean, I think we got some for the people.
We have a pair of tickets to see Reverend Peyton this Sunday at Greater Nevada Field. Gates open at 5. You have to pick your tickets up today by 5:30. So if you're calling in, you got to pick it up today.
So just know that. We need you to be here in the studio to pick up your tickets before 5:30 today. So that goes to caller number 9 at 775-333-0945. Talking NFL after this. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
Welcome back inside the studio. I know I said we were going to talk NFL. I mentioned this on my script here, and I wanted to just kind of put this out there because it made me laugh. If you're like me, you have an interest in WWE, you know there's a wrestler named Kane, and he just he managed to win an electoral race to become the mayor of Knox County, Tennessee. So a 6'8" former wrestler who was basically billed as the son of Satan,
and
the devil's favorite man,
the scariest person,
is now the mayor of Knox County, Tennessee. I just think that's funny. Also, because I was reading an article on it, and he said that he and his wife have lived there for about 20 years in that county, and they actually have a little real estate office together.
Oh, interesting.
So I can just imagine walking into a real estate office and seeing a 6'8" giant of a man. Like, yeah, hi, can you show me a house I could buy?
Could you imagine, you know, being a kid walking into that and just you were that guy on TV that literally smashed people.
You were the guy that threw the other guy through a table, right?
That's you, and he's like,
set him on fire. Like, all right, cool, man, cool. But I just thought that was funny because I saw that, and being a wrestling fan, I know who Kane is. His real name is Glenn Jacobs, if you're wondering. That's his actual name. His ring name is Kane, but his actual name is Glenn Jacobs, and he is the new mayor of Knox County, Tennessee. That just puts a little smile on my face. But let's get back to football now. So last night, we had the Hall of Fame ceremony and then the Hall of Fame game. And that was between Chicago and Baltimore. We got to see Lamar Jackson out there. We got to see RG3 out there. I don't think Trubisky actually suited up. Because I don't think he started. Again, I don't know. I didn't watch the game.
I didn't watch the game either.
You didn't watch the game either?
Dude, I was
you
working.
You were asking me like I watched it as if you were sitting in front of the screen. I thought you were the one that was going to sit down and watch it.
My father was texting me. He was like, are you watching the game? I was like, I'm working a game. There's no way of me even viewing it right now.
Yeah.
So just send me updates.
but let's recap kind of the class of 2018 who got inducted last night, because if you're like me, you don't care a whole lot for preseason. And that's not just football either. I don't really care for preseason in any sport. In baseball, I don't really care for spring training. Don't really care for basketball, summer league, or preseason. Don't really care for, the NHL preseason. I don't care for preseason is what I'm trying to say. So I enjoy looking at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Bobby Bethard is one of the men that was inducted last night. He was a contributor to the NFL. He was with the Kansas City Chiefs, Atlanta Falcons, Miami Dolphins, Washington Redskins, the
San Diego Chargers.
Yes, the appropriately named San Diego Chargers.
Was that back when they were good?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. Probably. Maybe. Probably not.
No one even remembers anymore.
No, no one remembers anymore. No, you know what? They weren't. 90-99. Trying to think. No, maybe. I think that was right around the Fouts era. Maybe a little after. So maybe he saw them somewhat be good. Which if he did, I'm very jealous. But he was inducted right beside Robert Brazel, who's a linebacker, played for the Houston Oilers from 75 to 84. Brian Dawkins, the safety, was enshrined with the Eagles and the Broncos. Jerry Kramer, who's a guard with the Green Bay Packers from 58 to 68, which is awesome if you think about that time span. That is the Lombardi time span. So to think about this man playing for Vince Lombardi, the man whose name is plastered on the NFL's biggest trophy, or not biggest, most important trophy, that to me, I can't even imagine just being him and knowing that you get to live life with the lessons and teachings of literally the guy, Vince Lombardi. Not reading a book like I would have to do or something to get the teachings. He got to talk to the guy. Like, to me, I'll never be able to comprehend that.
One day virtual reality, you'll be able to have a conversation with Vince Lombardi. And right? Like, I've been waiting for this. I'm 80 years old. I get this opportunity.
And he's just going to have a set list of answers.
Yeah.
Yeah, just going to diagnose what I say and give me the best answer they programmed into the system they can give me. But Ray Lewis, of course, I think I don't know if there's really a headliner in this class, but Ray Lewis is definitely kind of the more apt. I feel like if you're going to choose one, it could be Ray Lewis. Of course, spending his whole career with the Baltimore Ravens, winning two Super Bowls in 2012 and 2000. And just being, you want to talk about an emotional leader. Ray Lewis is like the emotional leader of emotional leaders. The man literally in one game would cry, laugh, be mad, and then just run around in a crazy circle. I mean, he was unbelievably fun to watch. And then, of course, you had some of the best wide receivers of all time, Randy Moss and Terrell Owens, getting inducted. Terrell, of course, not in Canton last night, chose not to show up. He will have his own private ceremony happen tomorrow at his Tennessee Chattanooga, I think is his alma mater. Shaking your head, you don't approve of that, Sean?
No, I think if you're going to be inducted in the Hall of Fame, you should show up to be there, unless you're dead. If you're dead, whatever, but like,
I agree,
if you're alive, it's almost like a slap in the face. It's like, yeah, I know I deserve this. It's like, do you though? I mean, like,
well, and he's mad at the wrong people too, but yeah, we're not gonna get into it. But you know, it was funny, I saw a story that Ray Lewis asked to have Terrell Owens' time. He's like, well, instead of just throwing that away, can I just have his time?
I'd like to speak for the extra 15 minutes I'm given, thank you.
Yeah, I think I read that it's your speech is supposed to be around 12 minutes. I think the longest anyone's gone is Brett Favre, who went about 35. So a little longer than I think they wanted him to go. But the question now kind of becomes, who could really be a front runner for next year's Hall of Fame?
Right.
Who could be the one to really kind of stand out? And for me, I saw a list of names. One that really stood out to me as a possible first balloter was Tony Gonzalez. I think as a tight end, he really helped show what a player at that position could do in the NFL, from catching to blocking, just being an all-around player on the offense. So to me, I feel like he would definitely be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I had another one, Ed Reed, I feel like as well, could be a pretty, I don't know if he'd be first ballot, maybe second time around. But I feel like when you see his name come up, he's going to be a Hall of Famer sooner rather than later. I don't know if there's anybody that you kind of had off the top of your head, but a couple other names here. Leroy Butler, safety for the Packers, was a very influential player for that team in that time span. Isaac Bruce as well, during the whole, I mean, with Warner, Bruce, and Holt, and that Rams offense that went to the Super Bowl that year. I think it was 99 or 98. They went to the Super Bowl and won. It was, you know, the huge Kurt Warner out of nowhere, this guy playing out of his mind. So those are kind of the front runners for me. I feel like Isaac Bruce, Tony Gonzalez. I don't really see any kind of defensive player. I mean, I mentioned Ed Reed, but honestly, I don't know if he would really be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He doesn't strike me as such.
Well, what about like Leroy Butler with the Packers? The safety?
Did I say him?
I don't remember.
Yeah, Leroy Butler.
Oh, you did say that.
Yeah, I said.
Never mind.
But I feel like it's those are the kind of the front runners in my book, at least. I feel like I'm hooked on Tony Gonzalez, especially just because I really feel like he was able to revolutionize what the tight end can do, and you see it now a lot with like a Travis Kelce or even a Gronkowski, just the size of him and what he can do. But I just don't feel like you see tight ends block like Gonzalez blocked.
Yeah,
he's just a big dude that got in people's way.
The only one that really comes to mind is Olsen with the Panthers. He was a really good blocking tight end.
Yeah, he was.
When the running game worked.
Yeah, or whenever Newton decides to take off.
Which is always.
Yeah, he does. He loves to run.
Yeah.
So with all of those players being inducted, these new players possibly being inducted, there's a lot of change to the NFL. Speaking of changes, their rules are being changed a whole lot, and we're going to talk about that after the break. You're again listening to the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show. It's time for My Two Spence Worth.
All righty, welcome back inside the studio. Let's finish the show off today by talking about rule changes in the NFL. There's been a slew of them that have come in this offseason. And before we get into any of them, help or hurt, really? Like, right, whenever you see a new rule come up, I don't care if whatever sport it is, you have to think, okay, is this going to help or hurt what we're trying to accomplish? And what is the NFL trying to accomplish? The NFL is trying to accomplish having fewer concussions and having fewer injury-causing hits. They want to make it more family-friendly, and they want to make it more, I don't even know how to phrase it.
They just want it safer.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say
they want the game to be played by toddlers.
I mean, basically, yeah. I mean, you know what? I mean, at this point, why not just have them take their pads off and just basically play like
flag football?
Yeah, flag or touch football or something like that. Because I feel like when this all started a couple years ago and all the CTE research came out, we understood what the residual effects of the football was. Then they started understanding it. And again, I kind of use this analogy a couple weeks ago when talking about baseball and their rule changes. It's there's a mother that understands their kid is crying, but instead of fixing the issue, they're going to swing them around by the ankles until they stop crying, and they're not going to stop crying until they die. So, that got a little morbid at the end there. Sorry. That's not how it went the first time, but that's just how it evolved this time. But basically, they saw the issue and they're trying to change it, but in changing that, they make so many more questions, and it's gotten to be so unclear now. I mean, let's start looking at what is new this year. So there's the 15-yard penalty for lowering your head to initiate or make contact with a helmet. So basically, you can't truck if you're an offensive player. Honestly, all it means is you can't lower your head to hit somebody. That's what it is.
Yeah,
you can't,
any part of the body. If the helmet hits any part of the body, it doesn't matter if it was an accident.
Your helmet can't initiate contact. That's what it means. Basically, if you're going to tackle somebody, it's got to be body to body or wrap them around the legs or something like that. You can't lower your head, offensive or defensive players.
Right.
So if you're a big running back, like let's say,
LeGarrette Blount.
LeGarrette Blount. What about the guy? I'm drawing a blank. The guy in Jacksonville.
Forte.
Thank you.
Or not Forte, Fournette.
Fournette, yes. So if you're like one of those guys, a Fournette, or if you're a Blunt, when that's pretty much your arsenal, they can't stop me because I'll run them over. Well, that's gone now because you're gonna get a 15-yard penalty, and I think if it's bad enough, it'll lead to an ejection.
Yeah.
So what is football then, basically? Why have helmets? Take the helmets away then. Just have them play in pads and run around without helmets, and maybe that'll teach them not to lead with their head. I mean, I don't know what you want these guys to do if you're going to give them helmets. You act so surprised that they turn it into part of what they can use it for. Like, I guess, I don't know if I want to call it a weapon, but they've turned it into a way to use it as a tackling device, and you're shocked by that? I don't get it. Like, they put pads on them for what reason? So they can hit. Well, if you're going to give them a helmet, they're going to sooner or later figure out how to use it to hit guys. So I just don't get that rule. And we saw it a couple times. I think there was, what, three penalties thrown? I read three of those penalties thrown in the Hall of Fame game. So just what are you trying to do in tackling? I get if you're defensive, I get it.
Well, I don't even get it. You're going into a sport where you know that you're going to get hurt.
It's contact.
Yeah. The whole reason I wasn't allowed to play when I was a kid was, one, I'm skinny, just so everyone knows. And my mom was like, you're going to break too many bones doing this. I guarantee it. And I took that, and what do you know? You see kids, breaking their bones, whatever. You know that you're going to do it. Whatever sport you're in, it's dangerous in some way. If you're in baseball, you're going to get pelted by a ball. What are you going to do to stop that? You really can't do anything to stop that.
Yeah.
Same concept goes with football. The whole reason probably 90% of the people watch it is because it is a brutal sport where people are showing, attacking each other. Instead of fighting each other, you're just tackling and throwing a ball at whatever it is. You're throwing some pigskin around, you're doing your thing.
We understand as fans what this sport brings, especially ones that are older than Sean and I. They've been watching it for decades. They know it. I've been watching it for maybe 14, 15 years and understanding it. And I understand this is a physical sport. But you're right. Is the more you take away contact, the more it just becomes guys in the backyard playing football.
Exactly.
And that just, then no one's going to want to watch that. But I don't know if that rule change is as frustrating to me as this catch change.
The catch change, we're shaking our heads, we're like blowing up back here. But
I mean, don't know what a catch is. I don't.
Apparently it doesn't exist anymore. According to this, if any part of your body touches the ground, so starting from the legs up, for example, if your knees hit the ground, from what we understand, and for example, if the ball is in the end zone crossing the barrier, you're still down at the 1 yard line. So the biggest one out of this is that Jesse James catch, and this is where it all started and originated from. Was he down or was he in? Now, I was just telling Spencer during the break, this is how I believe it. If you are extending the ball out, and as you come down, that ball is breaking the plane, and then your knees go down, you still got a touchdown because that was the initial rule coming out of it. Now, if that is the exact same play, you're down at the 1 yard line.
The requirement to survive the ground has been taken away. So basically what they're saying is that you have to catch the ball, get both feet down, and then make some kind of football move. So you have to control the ball, establish yourself, and then make a football move. So a third step or a juke or a spin or something like that to qualify it for a catch. And then the definition for a standing or a player going to the ground and it also applies to that. So again, if you're going to the ground, you would have had to have made a football move prior to that for it to really count as a catch. At least that's how I'm reading it.
Now, which also brings up the part of, okay, so you're going down deep, you're on a corner route, you're on the, right on the barrier of out of bounds, you catch the ball, 2 feet are in, or you slide a foot. Does that classify as a catch? Because you didn't do anything after the fact.
But you got both feet in.
And
you controlled the ball.
So it's going to be very interesting going into the season, seeing these types of plays, which are very common plays being done, and how it's going to work.
After last night's game, I can tell you this is probably going to be one of the most frustrating seasons for every football fan, because you're going to watch a game and you're going to watch a call be made by a ref and think, wow, even 3 years ago, that's not being called. And the game of football, at least by NFL standards, remember, we have the XFL coming. We also have the North American Football Association, so whatever that is. I forget, it's North American Football
something.
But that's also coming, I believe, in the 2019 season, so next year. So the NFL, if they can't figure these things out, maybe, just maybe, 5-10 years maybe down the line, the NFL is competing to keep its head above water with some other, because, Vince McMahon's already said, in the XFL, we're going to know what a catch is.
Right.
Now that's an immediate slam to the NFL.
We have one more rule to get to really fast, and it's the batting of the ball, which is probably one of the most frustrating things I've ever seen. So it says here, there will be a 10-yard penalty and loss of down assessed for illegally batting or kicking the ball during the play. Now, I understand kicking.
We understand kicking, yes.
That makes complete sense. But that completely takes out any defense you got on the ball.
Batting is a general defensive maneuver.
It just it sounds me. You're literally taking the game away. You're making it not worth watching, not worth playing, not worth anything at this point. And the real question is, how many people are they going to lose?
They're going to lose a lot of people to this. To all of these rule changes, it's going to make fans incredibly frustrated. But there is one new rule that I actually am a pretty big fan of, and that is no PATs at the end of regulation. So that just means that if a team scores, like take the Vikings and Saints, for example, the Vikings score in the last play of the game. They had to wait 30 minutes to round everybody up and kick a field goal. They no longer have to do that. You score that touchdown, it's over. Good game for everybody. Speaking of which, good game today, everybody.
Good game.
Way to go. That's the show. Thanks for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at My2Spenceworth.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatSoundGuySean.
Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Enjoy preseason football. Enjoy golf. Enjoy whatever you're going to do out there. Just have fun, everybody. Peace.